call to order the meeting of the House Judiciary Committee for Monday, January 29, 2007. Members, we have a fairly short agenda this morning, and it's recently become shorter. We had four bills originally scheduled. One of them was polled previously. That is 2392. And most recently, House Bill 2351 has been polled because it needs a little more work before coming before us. So we will be holding public hearings on House Bills 2315 and 2344, which will maybe a welcome respite after some of the long agendas we've been having recently. So I will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2315.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2315 clarifies that an admissible court of justice course may assign a criminal judgment to a private collections agency and may add a reasonable collection fee to the judgment.
Okay, we have Matt Marquis for the Oregon Collectors Association signed up. Mr. Marquis.
Mr. Chairman, for the committee, for the record, Matt Marquis representing the Oregon Collectors Association today. This bill was introduced at the request of the Oregon Collectors Association, and as your staff, Bill Taylor, mentioned, it is a clarification of current statutes. Over the last 7 years, there's been three separate statutes passed by this legislature dealing with collection fees. One found in ORS 137, which this bill addresses. There's another one in 697, which I just passed out to you, that deals with public bodies in general. And then the third one is one specific for the state judicial department. This House Bill 2315 would repeal sub 3 of ORS 137118, which allows municipal and justice courts to add a collection fee. What we've found is that because there's three separate statutes, folks have been confused as to which statute they should use, particularly when it comes to municipal and justice courts. Should they use this, or should they use Chapter 697? This simply takes away sub 3 on a collection fee for municipal and justice courts and allows them to use Chapter 697, which states that a public body may add a collection fee, the collection fee cannot exceed what the collection agency charges. So if an account is turned over to a private collection agency, the municipal or justice court in that case could add a fee, but it would be limited to the amount that the private collection agency charges, and they'd also have to give notice and other things. This statute here in 2315 doesn't state that the fee can't exceed what the collection agency charges, nor does it talk about notice to the debtor or things like that. So we decided that 697 would be a better statute to use than this one here. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Marquis. The one thing that catches my eye right off is that there was a limit on the amount in the provision that's being deleted in 137.118. Of 25% of the obligation, but no more than $250. And I don't see anything about the amount in 697.105.
You know, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the only limit in 695, you are correct, would be the amount that the collection agency charges. The thing with the current statute here in sub 3 on the bill is a municipal or justice court could actually add $250, but the collection agency fee might only be $150, and somebody might be pocketing the difference. So the only top end fee, I guess, on the in 697 would be that you couldn't use more than the collection agency charged. In the State Judicial Department statute, which I didn't make a copy of, it's in ORS 1, I forget the subsection, but that's actually a mandatory fee. That's why we opted not to go that direction, because the State Judicial Department has to add this fee, and we wanted to make sure it was still discretionary up to the municipal or justice court. They're the one that's actually adding the fee, not the collection agency.
But what if the fee were, you know, to pick some unreasonable, what I would strike me as being an unreasonable number? Well, or may I say it says a reasonable fee. So a number that's arguably reasonable, but it's pretty stiff, like a 50%
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think you would ever see that happen because all of these have to go out to public bid, and currently the rates for the state of Oregon range from a low of 7% to a high of about 18%. And I don't think you would ever see a public agency contracting with a collection agency at 50%.
Well, I guess the question is, I mean, ordinarily when you have collection services, creditor is paying out of what it's going to receive the amount. So, but if I'm understanding the process here, whatever the fee is added to the debt, so that the sort of the natural constraint that applies to most creditors who are trying to collect something that's owed to them, which is that whatever they have to pay as a percentage to the collection agency is coming out of what they're ultimately going to realize, it strikes me that isn't, it's missing here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're correct. In a typical transaction in the private sector, if somebody were to assign an account over to a private collection agency, the commission would come right out of whatever the amount owed is. In the last 8 or 9 years, as the state has been going down the avenue of starting to use private collection agencies really for the first time ever, one of the biggest issues that have has come up from state agencies and such is that if they turn these accounts over to a private collection agency, they would not receive all of their debt back. It's always been our position that collecting something is better than collecting nothing, because we're talking about very old accounts. But this was an issue that arose in discussions with probably about 15 or 20 different state agencies sitting around a table in the early 2000s, and this was something that they came up with as an idea. It passed in the 2003 legislature for both state agency, well, for public bodies in general, and for the judicial department in a separate bill. I can tell you that we have another bill, House Bill 2317, which is not in this committee, unfortunately, but is in the business committee, which amends Chapter 697 to allow a public body to add a fee lesser than the collection agency charges. Right now, the way that that statute is written, at least it's arguably written, that the fees have to be one and the same. If the collection agency charges 20%, the fee has to be charged. It has to be 20%. And what we're finding now is that there are folks, public bodies across the state that would like to add a fee lesser than what the collection agency charges, just to get at the point, Mr. Chair, that you just mentioned, as some of that money would come out of the debt owed then. And there's some differing lawyers think different things about how 697 is currently written, but we're hopefully amending that statute to allow for a lesser fee so that some of those portions could come out of the existing debt.
Okay. Any further questions from other members of the committee? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Marquis.
Thank you.
And I will close the public hearing on 2315 and open a work session on House Bill 2315. Members, I think you've got the gist of what's going on here. This is kind of reconciling different portions of ORS. It does have this peculiar feature that I was focusing on a moment ago, which is that it's not a conventional collection situation where the amount paid is coming out of the debt, although it can, apparently, according to the comment we just heard from Mr. Marquis. So, but it would, passing this bill would put align this criminal judgment collection process with a broader statute that we find elsewhere in the ORS. Unless there are any concerns about that. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, before that, Ms. Taylor, was there any objection from the courts at all on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisdom, I have not heard any objection from the court. I see Nancy Cozine sitting there. This bill's been on the agenda for a bit, so and I know that in the past that the collector's agencies have usually worked with the courts closely in this, so I would assume that if they had an objection, they'd be here.
Thank you, sir.
Perhaps I should.
I'll step out and make a call. It's not my bill.
Okay. I think what we'll do is, for the moment here, is close the work session on House Bill 2315 until we can get some input from the Judicial Department about their perspective on this bill. We'll move on then and open a public hearing on House Bill 2344.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2344 modifies the crimes of theft, criminal mischief, forgery, and the fraudulent use of credit cards by increasing the value of the property that must be taken or the value of the property destroyed or damaged. You'll see a chart that hopefully gives you what the current statute is and where it would be moved to should the bill pass. And it's been at least 10 years since some of these statutes were changed, and some of them even go back 30 years.
Very good. Ms. Christian.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Christian, and I'm the legislative representative for the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I provided written testimony to you, which also includes on the second page another chart in addition to counsel's staff measure summary that lists for you the offenses, the property offenses that are covered by this House Bill, House Bill 2344, the year that the amount that makes the difference between certain levels of property offenses was last adjusted. For example, aggravated theft, if you're looking at that chart, the current amount of greater than $10,000 was last adjusted in 1987. This is an Oregon criminal defense lawyer's bill that is similar to one from the 2005 session, House Bill 2968, that did pass out of this committee. This bill makes some further adjustments than the bill last time with regard to some of the offenses, and what it does consistently for each and every property offense is apply the inflation increase since the last year that the dollar amount for each offense was last adjusted. So again, for example, aggravated theft 1 was last, the amount of greater than $10,000 was last adjusted in 1987. Inflation has increased by 82%. That amount, $10,000 in 1987, today would be $18,240. In House Bill 2344 for the offense of aggravated theft, the amount for the amended is greater than $15,000. So I've provided this chart just to give you a sense of the last date that each of these offenses were adjusted for inflation or never adjusted for inflation, and the dollar amount that OCDLA has proposed and is reflected in House Bill 2344. As I indicated, House Bill 2968 last session was very similar to this present bill, and it passed out of this committee and at the end of session on October 5 remained in the Budget Committee. I understand that this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I don't know, Mr. Chair, whether or not there is a fiscal impact statement yet prepared on this measure. The bill also does one additional matter, which is it eliminates a current provision that if I steal something and you buy it from me, that you will be treated more harshly than I am treated. So I'm the one who steals, let's not use metal, but let's say I steal some electronics. And then if I sell them to you, you as the seller would be treated more harshly. This bill, after talking with legislative counsel, we made the determination to do away in this bill with that distinction. So
I'm sorry, Ms. Christian, you'll have to run that by me again. Okay. I didn't track the distinction you were drawing.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. If you'll look at my written testimony under the second bullet, the second item that House Bill 2344 does, in addition to adjusting amounts, is this bill would do away with the current distinction between what's called theft by receiving and I'll call it regular theft. And so under current law, a person commits theft one, which would be a Class C felony, if the person steals property with a value of $750 or more. Also under current law, a person who receives that same property that I stole would be guilty of theft by receiving if the value were only $200. I had forgotten, I think I've indicated before that I haven't practiced law for a number of years, and I frankly had forgotten that there was this distinction. And in talking with legislative counsel and others, how do I say it politely, we had difficulty understanding that distinction. And so we went ahead, even though that was the second part, the removing that distinction was not the original idea of our members and was not in the House bill last session, we did decide to include that in the bill.
And so in what manner did you resolve that? Was it by raising the theft by receiving threshold so it equaled the amount for the original theft?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. And if you look at the table that I've attached to my testimony, you'll see that, for example, theft one in the bill is increased to greater than $1,000. If you look at the far right column, exactly the same theft one by receiving would be pegged at $1,000. Mm-hmm. So we tried, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, bottom line, we tried to be consistent with regard to the adjustments in the various property offenses. And if, for example, aggravated theft, which today would be over $18,000, $10,000, in 1987 would be $18,000, recognizing that aggravated theft sometimes involves elder abuse or elder situations and other extraordinary cases. It wouldn't be called aggravated theft if it weren't extraordinary. We limited the new amount within House Bill 2344 to $15,000 rather than $18,000. So with that said, I mentioned the fiscal impact statement. I put in my written testimony that I would anticipate that this bill would have a positive fiscal impact statement, would have a positive fiscal impact on Department of Corrections. The more I've thought about that, I'm uncertain, and obviously we'll all wait for the official fiscal impact statement. Based on my past service with the state of Oregon, I am very certain that it will have a positive impact, fiscal impact on public defense. I just don't know the extent to which it will, the amount of the positive impact.
So it would seem as though any impact it would have would be a favorable one. That is, it would reduce the number of offenses that would be potentially involved in incarceration, which is where the cost drivers are, right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Right, okay. Any questions for this witness? Mr. Barker.
I'd point out this might have a real negative effect on the victims that are out there by changing this. I'm concerned. I mean, I appreciate some of the points, but in there again on the theft by receiving, if people aren't buying the stuff, maybe there'd be less people stealing it. And the personal devastation. I just, in fact, at lunch over at the Supreme Court building the other day, I was talking to a judge who had just been burglarized and lost an heirloom, which probably went either on the street or to a pawn shop for a few bucks, and he's out an heirloom, and it's like a minor thing, who cares kind of thing. But we just keep, I think $10,000 is a pretty significant hit to somebody. And they say, well, if inflation's come along, we ought to increase it, and it'll have a positive on this. And I'm not in sympathy with that. I'm more in sympathy with the people who are victims.
That's actually, we've got, we'll be hearing from Kevin Neely from the district attorney, so I think we have an opportunity to get another perspective. But I just say, if there are questions for Ms. Christian, let's
I'm sorry, I didn't realize we had another
question. That's right.
Represented
by the
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I want to just clarify, make sure I'm understanding this correctly. The big leap that stands out to me seems to be in the forgery area, where the $750 limitations have now gone up to $3,500. $1,500. And I just want to clarify, is that because it hasn't been adjusted since 1971? Because the other $750 just goes up to $1,000. It just seems like that's a pretty big increase in the forgery area.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonamici, it indeed is a large increase. In fact, it's a 409% increase. And forgery has not been adjusted since 1971 except, and there's a little footnote, the last note at the bottom of the table, that forgery 1 and 2 amount was $750 from 1971 until 2005. And it was increased to $1,000 in 2005. So what we did in consultation with legislative counsel was we started with the 1971 and said if this amount had been adjusted, had not been adjusted in 2005, what is the inflation rate? It's 409% increase, and it would be $3,500. So again, it's not that any of these numbers were particular ones that we grabbed out of the air. What we wanted to do was just consistent with inflation, have the amounts adjusted.
Mr. Chair. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Ann. Just a quick question. You mentioned that you think the fiscal would be a positive impact. Can you explain a little bit? I know you're just talking off the top of your head. Can you explain a little bit more detail why you think that would be a positive?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron, I can address public defense as far as a positive fiscal impact. The majority of public defense representation is provided under contracts in the state of Oregon with not-for-profit public defenders, for-profit law firms, and those contracts, with two exceptions out of 90-some contracts, are based on a rate that's negotiated per case. So the bottom line is a felony. To represent an individual on a felony is compensated at a greater rate under the public defense contracts, with the two exceptions, than the rate to represent an individual on a misdemeanor. So someone today charged with theft one, as an example, who would be prosecuted for theft two if this bill were to pass, public defense contractors would be paid a lesser rate to represent that individual on the misdemeanor.
A follow-up, if I may?
You may.
Since I'm not real clear on which of these charges is felony, can we go back to the forgery situation where today if somebody writes a check in somebody else's name and it's over $750, mm-hmm. they can be charged on a felony charge, is that correct?
That is correct, and I apologize, Representative Cameron and Mr. Chair. Staff counsel's summary had lists the classification of the offense, but you are correct that forgery in the first degree would be a Class C felony.
Okay. May I just, I want to follow up and through some logic so I understand this, Mr. Chair, if I may. So now that person, before they were charged a felony, would have to write that check for $3,500. Would that be an accurate statement?
That would be correct.
And then what happens to the person who writes a check below or does a forgery below $3,500 now? How are they charged?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron, today they would be charged with a Class A misdemeanor.
Which is punishable by...
Oh, it's 1 year in jail, and they've increased the fines. Council may help me. I believe $5,000.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope, Ms. Christian, that the criminal community out there is not so sophisticated that they're looking at where they're going to commit their crimes and comparing us with other states. In other words, by raising these thresholds, are we making us more targetable? I think I agree with my colleague, Representative Barker, that the $15,000 seems excessive. And I'm concerned about the credit card because I'm not sure, just to look at what inflation is, that's a big concern in our community, mm-hmm. is credit card theft for Matthews, and I'm not sure I really understand why we should do that. If you could comment on those, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, I would address the fraudulent use of a credit card first, and I'm well aware, having been the victim of that it's a major concern. And the increase that is included in House Bill 2344 goes from $750 to $1,000. And again, I would just emphasize that this is, the increases in this bill are not based upon making a judgment with respect to the different property offenses. Our intent was simply to, across the board, recognize the increase in inflation. And, Mr. Chair, if I could go back to Representative Barker, again, being very sympathetic to victims, none of these changes, I believe, would have any adverse impact with respect to a court ordering restitution for a victim. So if I were the victim and my loss was $5,000 today, even with these changes, a court still has the authority, in fact, now the mandate, to order full payment of that $5,000, regardless of the crime I'm convicted of, whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony.
Thank you. Follow up, Ms. Chair.
Okay.
And how do we compare to other states?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnant. I have to admit I have not done the research on that, and I would be happy to. I live in the state of Washington, and so I don't know the answer, but I do know anecdotally, having been involved in a neighborhood association dealing with theft and meeting with individuals within the Clark County Sheriff's Office. And this is anecdotal, but it came from a source who has put together all these maps that show thefts and property offenses in different people's neighborhood. And I was told, and this is about a year ago, that Vancouver, Washington, is suffering a huge increase in auto thefts, in particular because the city of Portland is not as aggressive as it once was with regard to auto theft. But I'd be happy to do the research and let the committee know the comparison to other states.
I think the question, members, maybe I'd let it draw maybe a broader sense about how relevant that information is without, if that's a critical piece of this decision we'd be facing ultimately on this bill. And it's not my intention to bring it to work session today, so we'll have an opportunity for this thing to gestate longer. The question is, would that be really important information, given that what Ms. Christian has already told us is that essentially the bill takes the policy choices that have been made over time about the relative magnitude of offenses and simply adjusts them for inflation, so that we're not making a different policy choice than we made about the seriousness of certain offenses than we made in the past. That's really the sort of the core of this issue. So I would say, why don't you wait and see what the fuller discussion is, Ms. Christian, before you take that as a takeaway assignment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Christian, I understand the fraudulent use of credit card is indicated in Section 9.
Correct.
But backing up to Section 8, where the crime of forgery in the first degree, and then subcapital B, check for $3,500 more, credit card purchase slip of $3,500 or more, is proposed, moving that from $1,000 to $3,500. And the inflation adjustment piece aside, and I understand the discussion and wanting to make account for the inflation of the period of time, but nonetheless, a victim who has lost $1,000 is pretty severely impacted. It would be to me, perhaps not to some others.
Oh.
But moving that to $3,500 seems a significant increase in regard to the loss of the victim.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I may not be understanding this correctly. The fraudulent use of a credit card, so Section 9, increases the current amount of $750 to $1,000.
And then Section 8 talks about forgery, kind of forgery, if a person has a written instrument. Under D, a check for $3,500 or more, a credit card purchase slip for $3,500 or more, a combination of checks and credit card purchase slips. in the aggregate total 35. So that's still a fraudulent use of a credit card if they have forged credit card slips, is it not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Flores, I believe it would be one and the same, and so they could be charged with the individual who does that forgery and uses a credit card fraudulently would be charged with both offenses, I believe, and Mr. Neely will correct me if I'm wrong. So the issue seems to be the increase from $750 for forgery one and forgery two. In 1971, it was set at $750, and the bill increases it to $3,500. I've heard that a number of times from individuals, and Mr. Neely will raise that same concern. And as in 2005, if there are limited provisions within the bill that need to be worked on, we're more than happy to work on them, to the point that people feel comfortable with the changes that are made.
And Mr. Chair, just a follow-up comment. Yeah. I appreciate the willingness to take a revisit of that, just from the perspective of the loss to the victim. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they necessarily say, oh, well, my losses now have to be considered in regard to inflation-adjusted dollars. A loss is a loss.
Mr. Chair and Representative Flores, absolutely, and we aren't aren't suggesting that changing the amounts will make it any better or worse for victims. It's horrible, and restitution is not impacted. And one of the things that maybe is mentioned in council staff summary is that if I'm one of these individuals who does a lot of fraudulent use of credit card and forgery over and over, like within a very short period of time, at least my understanding is that those acts can be put together with respect to adding up the total amount.
Any further questions for Ms. Christian? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Mr. Neely.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Kevin Neely. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Mr. Chow, you know that I signed up as neutral on this bill. That's, of course, neutral with a couple of caveats. I think the members of the committee, at least some of the members of the committee, have already identified some of the key issues to the District Attorneys Association. Back in 2005, the ODAA did, in fact, come down as neutral on the bill that was pursued in 2005. As Ms. Christian noted, there are a couple of key changes in the legislation they proposed this time. Those are changes that do give us a significant amount of uneasiness. You've already highlighted some of the key ones. I think the first one is that aggravated theft one. One of the things that we need to remember, and I think Representative Flores pointed this out, is that victimization doesn't get adjusted by the CPI. A victimization, at the end of the day, is something that all these people feel in their own families, and we need to account for that in our laws. They shouldn't just necessarily reflect what's happening with inflation in our community. And I think aggravated theft is one of those key areas where we shift from $10,000 to $15,000 as proposed in this bill. The crimes that fit in here, and I think Ms. Christian alluded to one, are crimes like elder abuse. And again, I think for some of those seniors that are affected by aggravated theft, $10,000 is a tremendous loss. So when this law was created in 1987, $10,000 was the right amount, and the DAs think that today, in 2007, $10,000 is still the right amount. Again, that number doesn't ultimately reflect the amount of victimization that occurs to these people. For some seniors who are victimized, $10,000 may be their entire life savings. It may even be more than their entire life savings. And so we need to keep that in mind as we look at these laws. The second area is an area that the committee has also already identified. That's forgery one and forgery two. Now, clearly here we see a 409% increase in the threshold value for forgery one and forgery two. I think it's safe to say that the number of forgeries we've had has increased by well over 400% since 1971. And so we have a real problem in this area. Identity theft, as you all know, is a key concern. And I think one of the things to keep in mind as you look at changing these thresholds is that the actual amount of victimization that occurs here isn't necessarily reflected in that number. So it may be true that a victim suffers $1,000 worth of damage, but if it's an ID theft, that could result in 3, 4, 5 years of trying to clear their credit history, 3, 4, 5 years of trying to figure out all the different ways that they're going to be victimized in the future because of that one act. So again, it's not necessarily the number here. It's the crime. And in this instance, with forgery, the district attorneys need to have some flexibility to go out there and find those folks that are stealing identities, that are forging checks, that are forging credit card applications, and take action in those cases. Raising this threshold will have an impact on their ability to, again, ensure the public safety, particularly as it relates to some of these property crimes, specifically in this instance, identity theft. I can tell you that across the board otherwise, these are largely numbers that the district attorneys have agreed to in the past. And at this point, again, in many of these instances, we would support a change. As Ms. Christian noted, it does provide for a little bit of cost savings for the state. I do think Representative Cameron asked how that saving is realized. I think Ms. Christian hit on some of the areas. It also allows district attorneys to treat some of the lower-end crimes as violations. Obviously, that's going to result in some cost savings as well. And so we recognize that in some of these instances, it is important to look at the value amount of the crimes and look at what's actually happening out there and say, okay, in some of these instances, $1,000 may be okay. If it was just $750, that's a fairly small increase. But again, we cannot support this bill until we see a change, or really no change, in the aggravated theft one, forgery one, and forgery two. And we're perfectly happy to work with Ms. Christian and the OCDLA to try and come to a position where we can realize some savings for the state and still ensure public safety. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Neely? It's like they're letting you off early, Mr. Neely.
All right.
Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2344. And as indicated before, I think this bill will need more work before it can come back to work session.
And Mr. Chairman, perhaps the banking people, the insurance people, could add their comments to that, to some of that are victims of insurance fraud, and especially the banks and the credit unions and identity theft. They might have an interest in that. Possibly.
For those watching us in the room and over the intranet, please recognize that point.
Thank you.
Okay, members, I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2315. I have been advised that the judicial branch is, judicial department has indicated they're okay with this change to the bill that's been brought forward to us by the Oregon Collectors Association. So at this point, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
I so move that we pass 2315 to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett has moved House Bill 2315 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, then the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Hoff?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chairperson.
Aye. House Bill 2315 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Wisnett, would you be willing to carry that? Very good. I will close the work session on House Bill 2315.
Is something you want to consider for the consent calendar?
I think this one can use a little explanation. Members, as I announced earlier, our other two bills that had originally been scheduled have been pulled from the agenda, including most recently House Bill 2315. So that concludes our agenda. Thank you for your attendance. We're adjourned.